हरि
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 109, Shloka Anusharana, summary of verses 1 to 13. Kamsa attempts to kill the eighth child of Devaki. 14 to 28, Kamsa begs forgiveness. 29 to 46, Kamsa is influenced by his ministers. 1 to 13, Kamsa attempts to kill the eighth child of Devaki. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued, My dear King Parikit, the doors inside and outside the house closed as before. Thereafter, the inhabitants of the house, especially the watchmen, heard the crying of the newborn child, and thus awakened from their beds. Srila Prabhupada comments. The activities of Yoga Maya are distinctly visible in this chapter, in which Devaki and Vasudeva excuse Kamsa for his many devious and atrocious activities, and Kamsa becomes repentant and falls at their feet. Before the awakening of the watchmen and the others in the prison house, many other things happen. Krishna was born and transferred to the home of Yashoda and Gokula. The strong doors opened and again closed, and Vasudeva resumed his former condition of being shackled. The watchmen, however, could not understand all this. They awakened only when they heard the crying of the newborn child, Yogamaya. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has remarked that the watchmen were just like dogs. At night, the dogs in the street act like watchmen. If one dog barks, many other dogs immediately follow it by barking. Although the street dogs are not appointed by anyone to act as watchmen, they still think they are responsible for protecting the neighborhood. And as soon as someone unknown enters it, they all begin to bark. Both Yogamaya and Mahamaya act in all material activities. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha. Bhagavad Gita 3:27. But although the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead acts under the Supreme Lord's direction, mayadyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Bhagavad Gita 9:10. Dog-like watchmen, such as politicians and diplomats, think they are protecting their neighborhoods from the dangers of the outside world. These are the actions of maya. But one who surrenders to Krishna is relieved of the protection afforded by the dogs and dog-like guards of this material world. And so then you can see how Yoga Maya, in her acting, then all these different things are arranged, and so the so-called guards, they don't actually understand. Right? And so if we surrender to Krishna, then we're afforded that same kind of protection. Krishna takes care of us. Because the others, it's like it said, nobody appointed them, but they think that they're very important and very responsible. Like that. And they generally don't necessarily do a great job.
It says here that both Yogamaya and Mahamaya act in the material world.
Okay, I was waiting for that one, yes. I was just thinking, as I went by that, I said, this is going to be a question.
We're thinking whether to ask or not.
Yes. So you've asked. Okay, it's official. Okay. Because how is it, how does Maya function? It's Mahamaya.
Oh, so the agency of Yogamaya?
Yes, because she's the potency behind that. In other words, the formal cause is Yogamaya. And the material cause then is Mahamaya. But she's only transforming based on the principle established by Yogamaya, which is according to the will of the Lord. So therefore, both energies are acting on the will of the Lord. Right? Because both of them are fulfilling His desire, how things should function. Like that? Does that make sense? So, those who are not surrendered to the Lord, then the material nature acts in accordance with those who do not follow the laws. With those who are pious enough to follow the laws, then she acts according to that. But still, that's the non-devotional element. Then, with the devotees, then that's a whole different aspect. So mechanically, things work basically the same. And so for the karmis, whether they're, you know, karmis or vikarmis, like this, they're going to simply, according to the work they've done, get the result of their work. Mm-hmm. Nothing more, nothing less. But for the devotees, because they're in another aspect, and the whole purpose of the creation is to bring the living entities to Him, then with those living entities, the devotees, then the adjustment on what results you get from action is based on the Lord's desire on what will give the best arrangement to bring one closer to the Lord. So therefore, one's not working within the realm of karma. One's working within the realm of advancement and devotional service. So there's results to your actions, but those results are in connection with what will be better for advancing. Right? For the karmis, it's just you've done your work, you get that. Does that make sense? That's all it is. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Okay, but it's a good question, because otherwise you don't think of Yogamaya acting here. But the Lord is acting here, so He only acts with Yogamaya. He doesn't work with Mahamaya. Right? Means He works with Yogamaya, she transforms as Mahamaya and then carries everything out. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thereafter all the watchmen very quickly approached King Kamsa, the ruler of the Bhoja dynasty, and submitted the news of the birth of Devaki's child. Kamsa, who had awaited this news very anxiously, I guess they were worried that this little baby is going to get up in the middle of the night and come and strangle him or something. You know, like that, because it's small, fit through the bars, you know, run down there. Okay, so. How do you say? Smash his head with the baby rattle or something. Yeah, something like that. So Kamsa, who had awaited this news very anxiously, immediately took action. Kamsa immediately got up from bed thinking, here is Kala, the supreme time factor, which has taken birth to kill me.
Baby boss.
Yeah. Thus, overwhelmed, Kamsa, his hair scattered on his head, at once approached the place where the child had been born. Srila Prabhupada comments. The word Kalaha is significant. Although the child was born to kill Kamsa, Kamsa thought that this was the proper time to kill the child so that he himself would be saved. Kala is actually another name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when he appears only for the purpose of killing. When Arjuna inquired from Krishna in his universal form, who are you? The Lord presented himself a Kala, death personified, to kill. Because that's for the demons, that's basically the only way they know the Lord. Because on the lower planets, then when it's time for when their activities are over in that position, then Sudarshan Chakra comes. And then whoever it is that it is time for them, the end of their life, then they kill them. So then for that, because he represents time, so they just think of time as the one who kills. So he just thinks he'll take advantage of the time and kill the person who's supposed to kill him at this time. But it's not well thought out. You can see, because of attachment, then the intelligence becomes clouded. That's the principle. Right? So then the universal form means all these things are put together, all these things, but actually what's happening is everything's being destroyed. It may be putting together, but it will be destroyed. Right? So for the living entity, it seems to be nice that it's made, it's maintained, but because of its destruction, then there's not going to be any satisfaction for the jiva himself. Right? So that's going to be the feature that sticks out the most.
By nature's law, when there is an unwanted increase in population, Kala appears. By some arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, people are killed wholesale in different ways, by war, pestilence, famine, and so on. At that time, even atheistic political leaders go to a church, mosque, or temple for protection by God or gods and submissively say, God willing. Before that, they pay no attention to God, not caring to know God or his will. But when Kala appears, they say, God willing. So that's the whole thing, is then they develop that mood. So when things really get bad, even the atheist, if someone is there, then maybe, like that. Because otherwise, then there's no option. This is but another feature of the supreme Kala, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the time of death, the atheist must submit to this Supreme Kala, and then the Supreme Personality of Godhead takes away all his possessions, Mrityu Sarva Haras Chaham, Bhagavad Gita 10:34, and forces him to accept another body, Tata Dehantara Praptihi, Bhagavad Gita 2:13. This the atheists do not know, and if they do not know, they neglect it so that they may go on with their normal life. Right? So the concept of what happens at death or this or that, then no one wants to deal with that, the materialist, because it's not something they look forward to. So they just try to ignore it and be happy in the meantime. But when death comes, then it's not exactly a joyous moment for such individuals. The Krishna consciousness movement is trying to teach them that, although for a few years, one may act as a great protector or great watchman, with the appearance of Kala, death, one must take another body by the laws of nature. Not knowing this, they unnecessarily waste their time in their occupation as watchdogs and do not try to get the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So they're just trying to protect what they have or even make it more. But the point is, if death is coming, what's the point? Right? You up to a certain level, you take care of and develop things. But after that, then one should be thinking about one's detachment from the material world. That's how it works. So that means 3/4 of one's life is for that. 1/4 is then for developing and trying to engage the senses according to one's interest. As it is clearly said, Aprapya mam nivartante mrityu samsara vartmani, Bhagavad Gita 9:3. Without Krishna consciousness, one is condemned to continue wandering in birth and death, not knowing what will happen in one's next birth. Because you can't say what you're going to do. If you're following all the material principles very nicely, all the pieties and all that, it would appear that that would be what would happen. I do this big yajna, I do so much charity, that I should be going to the heavenly planets. But it didn't exactly work out that way for Nriga. Right? It means he has the piety from that. The point is you do piety, then that will be there. But the point is impiety gives its result. It's not that the piety counteracts the impiety. Right? Because if it did work, then, how do you say? Better, what is it? Betty would have had some better butter. Right? But it didn't work out that way. So that's the whole point, is it's two different things. The results from your pious and the results from the impious. That's why you sometimes see, you can't understand. Someone has certain pious things, they're very wealthy, but nothing else is right. Or they're very beautiful or very influential. Something is there, there's some piety, but everything else is not great. You understand? You know, the mentality is very bad, this, that. They're born in a good family, so they had enough piety for that, but their mentality was bad, therefore it continues in this life. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? So you can have a mixed, the example of the one of these little dinky dogs, like that. Then like a miniature poodle or something, and then they he has his cashmere sweater on. He's on the 87th floor on the Upper West Side there, eating off his plate of all very nice quality things like that. So you could say, that's piety.
But the problem is he's a dog, you know? And as far as the dog concerned, he couldn't care less what he's wearing or eating, as long as he's got food. So I think once Bhavananda gave this example, you know, exactly like that. And then he says, and the other dog you have here, you know, the dog is a street dog and he's eating things out of the garbage and this and that. And Prabhupada said, actually, the dog doesn't care. He doesn't think, yeah, I'm living it up. So, they just don't care. So, you have mixed, you know, or it's like Gajendra. He's head king of the elephants on the heavenly planets. So powerful, he moves through the forest, he just knocks down the trees going down to the river. Right? But the problem is, he's an elephant. He's in the heavenly planets, he's king of his tribe, but he's an elephant. You understand? So that's how it works, is that you have all these mixes. Does that make sense? You know, some of the nice bonsai tree and some very fancy house and this, and taken care of very carefully, and someone else is out in the field and they're a bonsai tree because the goats come every day and nibble on their leaves. And so, you know, I know one devotee, that's how he would make great bonsais. He'd go out into the place where all the goats go, and then, you know, dig the trees out and bring them back and plant them and things, and be, wow, you know, they'd be impressed that, you know, it was done by the goat master. You know, like that, yeah. Yeah. Mahesh? Yes.
For a particular impulse act, when you get a result, you know, which is also impulse, so that impulse result can be counteracted with a pious activity.
No. Piety gives piety, impiety gives impiety. They're two different things.
Yeah, because many of
No. People want that. In illusion, they need that. They'll, in some way or another, decide that that's what should be done. But that's not what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Means you can't counteract an impious thing with a pious thing. You can by doing pious... What's the point of doing pious work? What's the benefit of you've done something impious, so now I will do something pious to counteract that? What's the actual benefit? Because it's not going to cut the impiety. It gets you to do something pious. And doing anything, it creates the desire to do that again. So therefore, you're starting a path of piety. And you will get the pious results from that pious work. But it's not that you won't get the impious result from that work. They don't counter each other.
Mm-hmm. Because, can I give an example? You know, many times when you have intercourse with the different doshas, and then for that particular dosha, you know, we have been suggested a particular solution.
Yeah, I mean, the main solution is whether you eat it with the sambar or whether you eat it with the the coconut chutney. That's the actual thing to do with doshas.
Not that dosha, sorry.
Oh, okay. That's the better of the doshas, right? No, you have that to do that, but what is it doing? You're thinking that by the pious, all it is doing is you're doing something that's pleasing to that planet. That's a pious activity.
Yeah.
It's not that it actually counters.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it.
Because many find positive results by counteracting, and it
yeah, and do some people not find positive results? You understand?
Yeah.
Because the principle is this. When it's just like this, have you ever heard of somebody having this disease and they can't get rid of it? They've gone to a million doctors, right? And then somehow then they try this some other doctor and then it works. So in their mind, this doctor is fabulous, all the other million doctors were terrible. But all it was is, no, his karma, that bad karma, is over now. And so now that doctor gives the effect. But otherwise before that, they're going to that. Because someone else gets the same problem, goes to a doctor, it's cured. Someone else goes to one after another, after another, after another, trying all the alternative things, and then finally they go back to just something, you know, And then, you know, wow, and then now what's the thing? Oh, this is the best thing in the world, everybody should do it, and this and that, blah. You understand? These are the things to do because why have you done, you've done some impious activity. What does the impious activity do to? Why do you do impious activities?
Wrong desire.
So therefore, by doing a pious activity, you're trying to correct that mentality. So the effect of correcting mentality, you're getting the results of that. It's not getting rid of the other one. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let us say, you made some chutney, and you put too much salt in it. Okay? And so then, what you're going to eat with it, you don't put any salt in it. You understand? Did you counteract the salt in the chutney? No, you just made it work. You understand? It's our idea, no, I can get rid of bad things by doing good things. But that's not actually what's happening. The good thing is giving the results of a good thing. You're doing a proper thing, you're getting the results of that. Not that you're counteracting the bad. Does that make sense? So you have to know what's doing what. Because otherwise, this is a material desire that we have, that this is what we hope we can do. But it's proper action gives proper results, bad action gives bad results. That's why it said, when how much sacrifice did King Riga perform? Said you can't count as many grains of sand there is in the universe. Didn't say like on Bondi Beach or Waikiki or something. He said in the universe, right? So, and so they asked him, "Do you want your pious or impious?" His impious was he'd become a lizard. So now with all that piety, unlimited piety, why couldn't they get rid of the impiety of becoming a lizard? Because out of that, the becoming a lizard was kind of like small in comparison. Does that make sense? So therefore, you can see is that it doesn't counteract. It's two separate things. He had very minimal, and he had unlimited the other, and so Prabhupada said, just like as a standard materialist, you thought, okay, such is so small, let's get that one out of the way. Then I can enjoy unlimitedly. He said he's a fool, he should have taken the good stuff. But by Krishna's arrangement, then he got the mercy of the Lord, so that's how it worked out. Okay? You understand? But this is what people are thinking. You know? Because then they'll take it to the next step is, okay, I'll buy any house and then I'll go in there and bring the Vastu guy to do all the corrections rather than looking for an actual proper house or building the house properly. You understand? So the whole point is they just want loopholes. Right? You have to pay your tax. Where's the loophole? You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that the living entity, due to the desire to control and enjoy, just looks for loopholes. So this is not actually, I'm interested in doing pious acts, I'm just interested in getting rid of the bad thing. I couldn't care less about doing something proper. In fact, I wouldn't do anything proper if there wasn't a bad reaction. Only because there's a bad reaction, they say, oh, this planet is this. Why is that planet like that? Because in the previous lives, how you've dealt, therefore the planet's like that. All it is the nine planets just give you the results of your... They're the ones that make the arrangements for whatever goes on. You know what I'm saying? It's not that they're in control. They're just giving the arrangement of what is there. The three modes of nature are controlled, and those are controlled by Mahamaya. She's controlled, and she's, you know, Yogamaya, she's controlled by Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is it's Krishna's arrangement. These are the guys that get it done. You know, so these are the officers that are responsible to see that the results of your things happen, right? And so it's done through the mechanics of the material energy, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So each of these nine planets are servants of Krishna. So the real thing is, if you have a problem in something, is you worship Krishna. That's the real thing. Because that then removes the material consciousness. That's what you're trying to do. But the actual thing, it's not going to change anything. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, how do you say? Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So the example that you talk of is that there is a glass of ink and you pour milk and then you all, the ink is out and then it's all, you know, it only works part of it. Because sometimes it
works. Yeah, but that's devotional. Mm-hmm. Only devotional can do that. That's the thing. It's not your ideal way. Best thing is just take the ink, throw it out, wash the glass, pour milk into it. But if you're not interested in doing that, just keep pouring milk and eventually the ink will be gone and then the milk will be left. But you can see it's a lot longer process.
Yeah. Then you have to
much more work.
The ink together.
Yeah, but so you just have to keep work. So you have to have a lot of milk to do that.
Yeah.
So that's the point. That with this, if that milk was being done without the ink, then how much effective it is right from the beginning? You understand? Yes.
Usually Krishna, he takes care of Krishna karma by himself.
Seven sisters. Yeah. Why seven? I have no idea. Probably because one can break a tie, because they're always arguing.
So we say it's Krishna karma, means Krishna takes personal care of the devotees.
Yes.
But this is according to the consciousness of the devotee. That's what we just said.
Yes. So it's according to how you act.
Okay.
You act improperly, then the reactions come like that. Sometimes they come in two groups. Mm-hmm. In case you're wondering, there's more. So it'll be 7 or 14 or like that.
And mechanically, it means Krishna can lessen the influence of the...
Yes, he can. But if that's what you're banking on, then it might not work that way, because it's about pure devotional service. Point is that the consciousness is impure. That's why we do things that we shouldn't do. And so then, because we've done something improper, we should get the reaction to that. That's just right? We wouldn't consider that it shouldn't work that way. Right? Of course, with ourselves, we're the only exception, but everybody else, it should definitely work that way. So the point is now, for a karmi, if they have learned the lesson, the reaction still will come because they've done the work. You know what I'm saying? But if the devotee learns the lesson, then there's no need for the reaction. You know, so whether it comes or not, it'll be whatever is going to be beneficial for the Krishna conscious. But it's not necessary to remove an anartha. You know, maybe they'll set an example for others, maybe some other aspect will go deeper in Krishna consciousness. Since this is already coming, you can take advantage of it. Krishna does that. What's already going on? Like, his dynasty at some point has to leave. His pastimes is winding up. And so there must be a time and there must be a method. Right? So then, what do you call it? The sage's curse of Samba then gave the method. And then Gandhari's curse gave the time. So then, yeah, why not? You know, it works. So if what is going on works, it'll happen. If not, it'll change. So that's the point, is we don't worry about it. We just absorb ourselves in Krishna, and then however things are supposed to work out, then they'll work. Does that make sense? So, you know, we shouldn't... So we have to understand is that when all these different things are completely taken care, that's for the pure devotees. So we should be worrying about becoming pure devotees, not by doing devotional service so we can get rid of karma. Because that's then... Because why would we want to get rid of bad karma? So we don't suffer, right? And then what's our point in not suffering? Enjoy. So then... Which is it? Is it going to be karma or jnana? Right? Are we trying to get rid of all? If it's just certain specific things, it's karma. If we want to get rid of everything, then that's jnana. Right?
Yeah. Would that mentality would be then bhakti-mishra karma?
It depends upon how much it is. It can be karma misra bhakti or bhakti misra karma. It just depends upon. It means person who's a karmi, right? And they turn to the Lord, like he said, you know, Prabhupada mentioned. You know, things go wrong, then even the atheist, you know, may turn to the Lord. Right? So then, what do you call it? Yeah. That would be bhakti misra karma. Because as soon as it's over and things go back to normal, again, they completely forget about the Lord. Right? They just consider that, you know, they picked the correct way of doing it. Spoke to the right people. Right? They have contacts. Right?
Direct line.
Hmm?
Direct line.
Yeah. But for the devotee, then they continue in their devotional service. It's just that they have these material desires. So, but those are going to get in the way anyway. So it's just a matter of the quicker you get rid of those, or the quicker we allow them to go, because devotional service will take them away. It's a matter of us letting them go, or are we hanging on and, how you say, you know, yelling and screaming and kicking, scratching, biting, like that? Or are we just letting them go? So yeah. So we have to give up the idea that there's some way to make the material world perfect. The material world isn't perfect. It's perfect in that it's perfectly arranged by the Lord, and it works perfectly according to His laws, and that way it's perfect. But the results to satisfy the jiva then is not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. What to do? Prabhupada said, hope against hope.
Yes.
Yes. Devaki piteously, helplessly, piteously appealed to Kamsa. My dear brother, all good fortune unto you. Don't kill this girl. She will be your daughter-in-law. Indeed, it is unworthy of you to kill a woman. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Devaki was shining with satisfaction. Devi, because she had been able to hide her son. Kripana indicates she was suffering because she hoped that the girl could be saved. Sate means she was expert in trying to cheat Kamsa. This child will be the future bride of your son. Seeing that he was going to take the child by force, she then addresses him as Kalyana, most auspicious, to indicate that he should not produce inauspiciousness by committing the sin of killing a girl child. Srila Prabhupada adds, Kamsa had previously excused Devaki because he thought that a woman should not be killed, especially when pregnant. But now, by the influence of Maya, he was prepared to kill a woman. Not only a woman, but a small, helpless newborn child. Devaki wanted to save her brother from this terrible, sinful act. Therefore, she told him, don't be so atrocious as to kill a female child. Let there be all good fortune for you. Demons can do anything for their personal benefit, not considering what is pious or vicious. But Devaki, on the contrary, although safe, because she had already given birth to her own son, Krishna was anxious to save the daughter of someone else. This was natural for her. Right, so this demoniac mentality is there. That's why in human life, then you see, then girls are always protected. That means at any age. Right? Boys are protected as brahmacharis and as old men. Right? In between, they have to do the protecting. But girls from, you know, birth through, you know, all the way through, they're always taken care of. Right? Does that make sense? Brahmins are always taken care of. Cows are always taken care of. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so then she's trying to get him to act on the human platform. So we can see in the world that people are, you know, not following this principle. So that's not human. That's the principle. So because they lack the human nature, that's why then they don't deal with properly with any of the five. Like that. Human nature means you deal with all five. And if you only pick this one or that one, that's a political cause. Because that will change. Today you're into this, and then after a while you're not into this, you're into that.
Is that, yeah, that's So if people, they propose in one cause, two, whatever, it is always political?
Generally, because why would they only choose that? Because human life means you take all five.
Well, they don't know.
Yes, but then if they don't know about Dharma, what platform are they on?
Pranamoy.
Pranamoy is the platform of politics, economics, justice, morality. That's what it is. Because politics means you're getting your own thing done. But it's not necessarily that you're dealing according to Shastra. Those who deal according to Shastra, they follow Dharma. In following Dharma, then you're applying it in the smaller circle in Artha, and the smaller circle of the practical is then in the Niti. But persons like him, they only know Niti. Really, that's all they act. Dharma is there only because of the benefits that they give. So that's the point of Niti. You only do those things that you get benefit from. And anything that doesn't give you benefit, you make sure that you get rid of it lock, stock, and barrel. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's everything. You understand? So there's a difference. So it will take that on. Maybe in their presentation it's not political. But it doesn't mean it's not. Like greenies, are they not political?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the whole point. But they're trying to do something very nice. But the method of doing it is political. Or working for, education or any of these things. The field that they work within is politics, because one, that's the only thing that goes on in the world, because it's not functioning on the Vedic principles. And two, is they don't know anything else. So it's the most powerful of all the different tools you can use. Unless, of course, you had enough money. If they were fabulously rich, then they might function in a slightly different way. They would just buy the companies and then adjust how they deal. But once they buy them, then they find out that they won't make any money if they adjust it. Then, there might be a difference of like that. So therefore, they would work that out first, and so then they wouldn't do that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole difficulty, is that all these different things, even in the modern context, it's being presented as this something very ideal. They're being idealistic, but the methods being used are political. Because they're not actually considering Dharma. Because they're to save whatever their group, it will be at the expense of others. Does that make sense? So that's the whole difficulty that comes out. So it's not a well thought out. It's not based on Dharma that these are the laws of nature. It's based on that due to my conditioning, this is what I value. And today they value, tomorrow they don't. It changes that easily. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole difficulty. It's more rare that you see someone stick to something even though it's difficult for them. And generally those politicians, people very much appreciate. Like Mahatma Gandhi, or I say Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, these are politicians who were very saintly. And the common thing they all had is they all died. So most politicians aren't into something that to that degree they're willing to die for it. You know what I'm saying? So that's that point, is that dealing in that field without it being based on Dharma. Because then the point is you educate people in Dharma, you preach the Dharma. Right? But it's not that you don't use the thing. So that's what they're using here, Devaki and Vasudeva. They use Dharma, but it's not that they're bringing out the sub-points of Dharma, of Artha and Niti. But the point is it based on Dharma? Well, Kamsa doesn't act on that platform. Mm-hmm. He'll sometimes use Dharma if it's beneficial, and then sometimes not. So they're not actually situated there. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the points, is that you can see is the nature that's there. So that's the thing. Demons can do anything for their personal benefit, not considering what is pious or vicious.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If pious is good for them, they'll do it. But if they consider that being vicious is good for them, they'll do that. So it's not that they'll consider these things. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, later it comes up as a problem. Like, I think, Genghis Khan, right? When he was a kid, they killed his father, because his father was the head of the tribe, and the other tribes that didn't like him, they eventually, they tried so many times, and one time they got around to killing him. And it was just, you know, the father and the kids and a couple of people. So they decide, since he's a kid, they shouldn't kill him. Right? Does that make sense? So then, you know, they made some other arrangements. But then later on, he became the big guy and probably came back and got them. So that's why Niti works that way. It's for those kind of people that are so vicious, then it's just a clean slate. But the problem is that the karma that's accrued from that, it'll only give them a temporary. But that's all the more they see anyway. So that's why they prefer that. You know what I'm saying? You know, so like that. That's the principle. Yes.
Right, when you say like in Gita, divine nature or demoniac nature.
Yes.
Demoniac nature means to live and in Panamaya or Anamaya.
They may live at these other, but the point is the main thing is, as you can say, is demoniac means that they don't accept the supremacy of the Lord and following His rules to please Him, because that's theistic.
Yes.
If you follow the rules simply for karma and gyan, you're theistic.
Yes.
But at the same time, is it has that materialistic aspect. So in that way, then it has that side. But that's you could say pious on that side. But otherwise, you can say is basically that they don't act within that. Some do more. These bigger ones do. You know, like Hiranyakashipu does for most of the things. Ramana would for most of the things. But, as it says, is that if there's a point where they don't see the benefit in acting piously, they won't. So that's the thing, is that it's not consistent. While Yudhishthir, no matter what happened, he acted in a pious way. And Duryodhana would act pious if it was to his benefit. But if not, then he wouldn't. You know, so that's the whole point. You know, you don't see, even though Duryodhana and his brothers were so much trouble, you never hear of any time where the Pandavas were thinking to kill them as a method to create peaceful environment. You know what I'm saying? Because that's just not one of the things that are done. Right?
Except Bhima, right? Except
Bhima. No. What plan did he ever make? But that's because they're acting impiously, and as a king you're supposed to establish dharma.
Yeah.
But why didn't he? But what's the direct reason he didn't? Yeah, he told them no, and so he follows dharma and follows his elder brother, therefore he didn't do it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so if Bhima submits, then what are the others to say? Because he's the most, you know, vociferous on these points. So if he follows, then naturally Arjuna and the twins will follow. So you have to understand, dharma is another thing. And by that, it always works out. It doesn't mean that difficulties aren't there, but there's difficulty because you're in the material world. It's not because, oh, he's being religious and look at all the bad things. You're in the material world. It's bad. Look at all the nice things that happen. Right? We're supposed to look at the nice stuff. Right? So that's the whole point, is that we tend to only look at the nice when it's for our benefit. And when it's not nice, then, you know, why is it like that? You know, the existential crisis happens when things are bad, not when things are good. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. He's, how you say? The existentialist, when he sees that there's no meaning to life and that, goes and parks his car on the train track, and then he's waiting there and the train's coming and all that, and there's the noise, and then the train goes by and he was on the wrong track. But he doesn't drive to another track. He just drives down to his favorite cafe. You know, okay, well, why not? You know? Wasn't meant to be, you know. Yeah, that's right. That's the point.
God willing.
Yeah, what to do? Okay, God willing. He was supposed to have coffee with his friends, so yeah. Yeah. Because the whole point of them being existentialist is that it's something that they think they'll enjoy. It'll be cool. They kill themselves, it'll be cool. Everybody will think this is cool. And, you know, he really followed his principles and all that. But nobody cares. Everybody thinks you're an idiot. And Yamaraj also. And since he's the one that has to deal with it, then that's the point. Is they think it'll be something cool and far out. But it's not cool and far out. You know, so therefore, because it's cool and far out, it'll be for their benefit. So there's still, it's about enjoyment. Mm-hmm. You know, how they can control to enjoy. You know, or I'll get rid of suffering by my arrangement. But you don't get rid of suffering. It means your senses are giving you trouble, right? And all the body's giving you trouble, so you get rid of that. But the point is then you're still left with the mind, and that's the one that actually is giving you the trouble. So then it's more, so it doesn't work out. So pious people, they do pious stuff, and impious people, they'll do impious stuff, and like that. So you have to see it's two different paths, it's two different determinations. There'll be elements that are mixed, but the main thing is you have what the rules of the Shastra, and what's karma, what's akarma, what's vikarma, right? Does that make sense? And then what's okarma? But real okarma is bhakti. Because even jnana, then you're going to come back again anyway. So you're going to be in that same cycle. Mm-hmm. So only bhakti takes you out. Right? But to not do anything, that's not a benefit either. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's why Krishna says you have to know what is action and what is inaction. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's action and inaction, inaction and action. Right, so they're doing nothing, but still they're getting a reaction for that because they should be doing something. Right, and they're still being involved in the material world. Well, the devotee is performing action, but it's inaction because it's transcendental. Devaki continued, "My dear brother, by the influence of destiny, you have already killed many babies, each of them as bright and beautiful as fire. But kindly spare this daughter. Give her to me as your gift." Srila Prabhupada comments. Here we see that Devaki first focused Kamsa's attention on his atrocious activities, his killing of her many sons. Then she wanted to compromise with him by saying that whatever he had done was not his fault, but was ordained by destiny. Then she appealed to him to give her the daughter as a gift. Devaki was the daughter of a Kshatriya and knew how to play the political game. Because the politics is part of what is used. Diplomacy is the standard thing that's used in situations that is necessary. Mm-hmm. So this idea that diplomacy is bad. Mm-hmm. No, it depends what's its purpose. If diplomacy is used to establish dharma, then it's not a problem. But if it's used for one's own selfish motives, then the lower, the farther it's more about yourself, then that's where it seems that it's wrong. Right? Politicians do things just for themselves, promise the world, but aren't going to do it. They just want to be in the position to get the facility. You understand? But if the political element is used to establish a proper situation and all that, then that's just the way it goes. Because everything is, how do you say politics? I think there's a word for it, can't remember what it's called. It's something like extreme honesty or something. It's kind of a modern thing. It's come up in the last, I think, heard about it in the last 10 years. Maybe it's been there long. Means that the person like makes a determination that they will say everything that they think as they're thinking of it and won't hide anything. Of course, it always gets them into trouble. Like that. But it's a thing, they think, I'm being honest, this is the real good thing. But no one wants to hear about the honesty. You know, it's just like, you know, it's like you go to the hospital, the guy's, you know, not in a great shape and all that. And so what do you ask him? You know, how are you feeling? What do you expect him to say? You know, he's going to say, yeah, you know, yeah, no, we're okay, you know, could be worse, or, you know, stuff like that. What if he says, what do you think I am? I'm sitting here, I got tubes coming out of everything, I can't move, I'm on this and that. What kind of idiot comes into a hospital and asks that kind of question? I mean, what are you doing here? You came here to cheer me, get out of here. Right? Is that the reaction you want? No. You want something diplomatic. The point is people want diplomacy. They don't want it as it is. You know, that's what culture is. Culture is about how to deal nicely so that everybody's happy. Because all souls are trying to be happy, so that's what you're doing. Doesn't mean that it's not in connection with the truth, with reality, with Dharma, but it's still spoken nicely, pleasantly. That's the whole thing. You're trying to do it in a nice way. Is that something? So that's what it is. That's culture. So then as soon as diplomacy goes out, the culture goes out. Because generally the people who are anti-diplomacy are also anti-culture. Like that. Means they may, of course, can't say it's totally, they may like frozen yogurt or something. But the point is it's other than that, they're not into authority, they're not into all these different things, they're not into people having any facility more than them. Everything should be equal and this and that doesn't work anyway. Because the point is if you check, you take two guys on the street, they started off in the same place. One guy saved his money and didn't buy, you know, heroin, and the other guy did. So the one guy's stealing your refrigerator, and the other guy is a millionaire. In fact, he makes the refrigerator. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. There's no such thing as equal. There's always a difference. So it's according to nature everyone's dealt with. That's what Dharma defines. Right? So you deal with them appropriately for their position. Right? And you try to help however it is appropriate. Giving lots of money to the guy on the street is not a good thing, because why is he on the street? Because he doesn't know how to deal with money. That's why you give them food, you give them clothes, you give them stuff that they can use. Don't give them anything too fancy, they'll sell it. You know what I'm saying? So that's just how it works. And then if you find an individual out of that who has potential, then they're the ones that are helping. Like you have the guys in the soup line at the kitchen, then the guys that you see has potential, they're the ones that start helping and start doing, and then you start to rehabilitate them into society. But the other guys, no, you just give them, you know, nicely give them their food, see that it's all going nicely and everything like that, and they behave well with each other, and that's all you can do. You know what I'm saying? So you have to know what actually can be done. Otherwise you say, no, this and that. But they're not going to do that. They're not going to bring all those guys home to their house. They're not going to do those things. They're going to do what they can. Some will do more. But the point is that unless you understand what's Dharma and what's the purpose of Dharma to please Krishna, you can't actually really help people. Some temporary relief, yes. But permanent relief, no. Because they're in that position from it means their mundane consciousness. So the only real solution is Krishna consciousness. Then they'll actually see what's real Dharma. Because if you understand real Dharma, following Dharma is easy. Or at least it's, you know, something to work towards. But if you don't understand real Dharma, sometimes what's the purpose of Dharma is not seen, because it doesn't give me immediate results. In politics, there are different methods of achieving success. First, repression, Dhamma. Then compromise, Sama. Then asking for a gift, Dana. Devaki first adopted the policy of repression by directly attacking Kamsa for having cruelly, atrociously killed her babies, right? Because many other times you start with Sama. But that's not going to work because of his mood in that. You have to deal with Dhamma first. You understand? So you have to even know what order. It's not that means your standard orders, you speak nicely, that doesn't work, then you give position, that doesn't work, then you separate their position off so they're not strong and give ultimatums, and that doesn't work, then Dhamma. Right? But she started with that, just to catch his attention. Then she works backwards. Deva first adhake. Then she compromised with saying that it was not his fault. Mm-hmm. Right? And then she begged for a gift. Right? So here, because it's a thing, because the compromise, then she gets the gift. Otherwise, you're giving gifts. But she also said that this girl could be your daughter-in-law. So she's already started with that. And so for that to happen, then she has to have the daughter. Right? As we learn from the history of Mahabharata, or Greater India, the wives and daughters of the ruling class, the Kshatriyas, knew the political game. But we never find that a woman was given the post of chief executive. Right? Like that. So they know how to do it. That's how that they're supporting the husband and giving directions there, because he'll also talk with her. He'll talk with his ministers, this and that. He'll also talk with his wife. Right? And so it means how much she's qualified, then to that much he will discuss. Like you see the Pandavas, they discuss things with Kunti. Yudhishthira is discussing with Draupadi. Like that. So that's the whole thing, is it will be part of the thing, because they know the field well. And because of the nature of women being four times more clever, then politics is actually their strong point. But the difficulty is because of that, the politics is overbalanced. That's why technically they're not supposed to be chief executive. Because you do have the aspect of using the politics for their own, for what's important for them, rather than what should be done. So that's the weakness. So that's why it's not recommended. This is in accordance with the injunctions of Manu Samhita. But unfortunately, Manu Samhita is now being insulted, and the Aryans, the member of Vedic society, cannot do anything. Such is the nature of Kali Yuga. Right? So it's being insulted by people not following. It's also being insulted by people saying it's not important, not for us, this, that, blah. Okay, the common devotee says that. Yeah, I can understand that. But if a leader says it, Prabhupada very clearly says the leader should study Manu Samhita. Like that. So, therefore, this point. Devaki concluded, "My Lord, my brother, I am very poor, being bereft of all my children, but still I am your younger sister, and therefore it would be worthy of you to give me this last child as a gift." That Sukadeva Goswami continued, piteously embracing her daughter and crying, Devaki begged Kamsa for the child, but he was so cruel that he chastised her and forcibly snatched the child from her hands. Srila Prabhupada comments, although Devaki was crying like a very poor woman, actually she was not poor, and therefore the word used here is dinavat. She had already given birth to Krishna, therefore who could have been richer than she? Even the demigods had come to offer prayers to Devaki, but she played the part of a poor, piteously afflicted woman because she wanted to save the daughter of Yashoda. Right? So they know how to use. So in the appropriate situations, then this is powerful. Sukadeva Goswami continued, having uprooted all relationships with his sister because of intense selfishness, Kamsa, who was sitting on his knees, grasped the newborn child by the legs and tried to dash her against the surface of a stone. The child, Yogamaya Devi, the younger sister of Lord Vishnu, slipped upward from Kamsa's hand and appeared in the sky as Devi, the goddess Durga, with eight arms, completely equipped with weapons. So she didn't show up as Lalita, a very nice form and pleasant and everything. She showed up as eight-armed Durga, right? This is the one that you kill Moishasura and all those guys with. So, Kamsa knows, okay, she means business. Because whatever he wants to do, he wants to fight. Okay, he's only got two arms. So he has a sword and shield, bow and arrow. She's got that plus, others. So it's not gonna work. Sukadeva Goswami continued, the goddess Durga was decorated with flower garlands, smeared with sandalwood pulp, and dressed with excellent garments and ornaments made of valuable jewels. Holding in her hands a bow, a trident, arrows, a shield, a sword, a conch shell, a disc, and a club. And being praised by celestial beings like Apsaras, Kinaras, Uragas, Siddhas, Charnas, and Gandharvas. Uragas are the celestial snakes. Who worshipped her with all kinds of presentations, she spoke as follows. Yogamaya said. Right, so she, just to take part in the Lord's pastimes, then came as a baby. But otherwise, this is, you know, her position. Sorry? We missed the comments. We did. Srila Prabhupada comments. The word Anuja, meaning the younger sister, is significant. When Vishnu or Krishna took birth from Devaki, he must have simultaneously taken birth from Yashoda also. Otherwise, how could Yogamaya have been Anuja, the Lord's younger sister, as was established in the previous chapter? Like that. Like Lakshman is Anuja. You know, it's a short A. So he's the younger brother of Ram. Rama Anuja is Lakshman. Right?
Can you say that Krishna and Yogamaya,
they could have been born at the
same time. Krishna was born first. Therefore, Yogamaya is conjugate.
So, are these women the sisters? Yes, born to Yashoda.
Yes.
Okay. Because?
That's a possibility.
Yes, but what's the doubt? Means if you have one lady giving at one time of birth and there's two children, would you call them twins?
Yes.
So what's the doubt?
No.
You wouldn't call them twins. You would call them twins. So what's the doubt?
I was thinking that when Krishna is going to Devaki, at the same time, we saw in the morning class also that Krishna was born to Yashoda also.
Yes.
Now the sister has also come up in that. So that
yes.
means that Yashoda, Devaki gave birth to one child, whereas Yashoda gave birth to two kids. One
yes.
was a boy and other was a girl.
Yes.
That could be that was the reason. Just to confirm whether this is the fact.
But it wasn't confirmed in the morning. And Prabhupada here didn't just establish it.
It doesn't mention twins specifically. It just mentions Anuja. Anuja means it spoke about the 8 months pregnancy, which was.
But the point is are they born at the same time?
They're not born at the same time. Not born at the same time.
Not born at the same time.
Because one.
Okay, let's say twins are being born. Are they born at exactly the same moment?
There's a difference of 3 months here and there. So it's not the same time, actually. But just as Hiranyaksha.
Are you listening to what you're saying here? You're talking about, are they twins?
Yes, they are twins.
Yes, so that means they're born together.
Yes.
Yes. But then why is there a doubt whether they're twins since means Gokul Krishna and Yogamaya are born together. Vasudev Krishna is born in Mathura. So, you know what I'm saying? In other words, you're getting somehow or other caught up on your own words and bewildering yourself because at certain parts of what you say you're confirming what you want to say, and at other points, then you're going on and now doubting what you just said.
I couldn't find a particular word, and that's why it was a confusion for me whether it's really twins or not.
But how? What's the importance of twins? How has twins become the important element? Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. Are they brothers? Is Hiranyakashipu the older brother and Hiranyaksha the younger brother?
Yes.
Were they born at the same time?
No, there are different moments. Same moment is. The first child is born and the second child is born, so obviously.
Oh my God. Why are you arguing over these words?
They're triplets. They're not even twins.
Who?
Vasudev Krishna, and then...
No, but he was born somewhere else. Another mother. But born to Yashoda was Krishna and Yogamaya. So, see, you're taking it, if it's the same nanosecond, then they're born together. Is that what's required to be a twin? So how would you define twins being born? Don't worry. No one's going to ask you to be there. Yes, like that. So, see, you know what I'm saying? So if you don't have an understanding of that, then why get involved in the discussion? See, is what I'm trying to get at is the thought process being used here. Does that make sense? Is that we're looking at this, but we're asking a question that actually technically is not very important. It's already been established that they're brother and sister. And so then, they're born at that same area of time. You know what I'm saying? Because twins aren't born at the same moment. One's born, the other one's born after a few minutes, sometimes even hours, but whatever it is. It's considered to be one kind of scene.
One pregnancy.
Yeah? So then, what's the problem? So why do you have to have that the word, that the twin aspect has to be established before you can move on with this point? What does it matter? The Lord appears, Yogamaya appears, because we know that they're not appearing like anybody else. They're appearing from the heart. So the point is how is this, it means it has two explanations. One, you have the child, we say is born from the womb, but actually they're born from the heart, because it's the consciousness of the parents that then conceive of that particular child. So they're actually born from the heart. Then mechanically, there's the aspect of the womb. But for Krishna, you don't require the womb since he's already there. He doesn't have to grow and stuff. So therefore, he's just taking birth from the heart. So therefore, in Vasudeva and Devaki, and in Yashoda and Nanda Baba, they'll be taking birth from the heart. So you don't technically require the womb aspect. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Not that they don't necessarily manifest symptoms of pregnancy, but the point is they're taking birth from the heart. So now with that, now how are you going to deal? Can twins be both born from the heart at similar times, or would they be considered not twins? You understand? My point is what's the importance of twins? Why pursue? That is a point. The only point that's important is Krishna's the elder brother and Yogamaya is the younger sister. And then Balaram is older than Krishna. So that means then he's the eldest brother, then Krishna, and then Yogamaya. And so they're famous as brothers and sister. But it's so famous that, you know, you have a deity where you have Jagannath, Baladeva, and Subhadra, and they're considered one deity. It means you always have them together. You know what I'm saying? So they go together. Does that make sense? So what I'm meaning is, don't overthink things that don't actually have an importance here. Because then if you get into twins, then what kind of twins? You know, are they identical twins? Are they equal twins? Did one of them take more of all the, you know, the stuff available, and therefore you have one's bigger and one's skinnier, like that? I've seen that. I remember we had two brothers in the Gurukul, twins. One was big and stocky, and the other one was really skinny, because the egg didn't divide evenly. It divided two-thirds, one-third. So it was like that. So, I mean, so then we get into what kind of twins, and I'm sure if you really get into it, there's all kinds of fine details on that, and You know what I'm saying? So the twin part is not important at all. Even if it is, they're twins. So what? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's what we're discussing. You understand? And the point is that connect the dots, but we're not. No, we have to hear the word. The point is here you're supposed to take and put it together, not by mental speculation, but by, you know, these are there. So he's the younger sister. So the point is, important thing is she's the younger sister. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Okay. Okay. Yogamaya said, "O Kamsa, you fool, what will be the use of killing me? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has been your enemy from the very beginning and who will certainly kill you, has already taken his birth somewhere else. Therefore, do not unnecessarily kill other children." Sugadev Goswami continued, "After speaking to Kamsa in this way, the goddess Durga, Yogamaya, appeared in different places, such as Varanasi, and became celebrated by different names, such as Annapurna, Durga, Kali, and Bhadra." Srila Prabhupada comments, "The goddess Durga is celebrated in Calcutta as Kali, in Bombay as Mumba Devi, in Varanasi as Annapurna, in Cuttack as Bhadra Kali, and in Ahmedabad as Bhadra. Thus, in different places, she is known by different names. Her devotees are known as Shaktas, or worshippers of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas worshippers of the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself are called Vaishnavas. Vaishnavas are destined to return home back to Godhead in the spiritual world, whereas the Shaktas are destined to live within this material world to enjoy different kinds of material happiness." But it means they won't go back. They can't, because their purpose, they're worshipping material energy, to enjoy material energy. And so they'll always stay here. Okay. So unless they switch from being a Shakta into Vaishnava, then only they can go beyond. Okay. So after this, then she's known and then worshipped in some of the places. Kamsa begs forgiveness. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "After hearing the words of the goddess Durga, Kamsa was struck with wonder. Thus he approached his sister Devaki and brother-in-law Vasudeva, released them immediately from their shackles, and very humbly spoke as follows." Srila Prabhupada comments, "Kamsa was astonished because the goddess Durga had become the daughter of Devaki. Since Devaki was a human being, how could the goddess Durga become her daughter?" Right? So, such a powerful deity, right? Because it's a very common thing that Kshatriyas all worship Durga. Even if they're Vaishnavas, they still worship her because she's the controller of everything. And they're in charge of maintaining and controlling the material energy. So under her blessings, they're doing that. And then many of them aren't necessarily Vaishnavas. They're just like,
yeah. So it means they consider Durga more powerful than Krishna?
No, not necessarily. It means if they're Vaishnavas, But here, because he doesn't really understand the position, all he knows is Durga's big. Because she's bigger and more powerful than all the other demigods put together. Because they all try to kill Moishasura, and who's the other one? I think it came up twice. So she was the one that was able to kill them all. So just her position is so... Because she's in control of the material energy. So then, one, to have a demigod as your kid when you're human, and then to have Durga, you know, so it's definitely impressive.
Because he says here, wow, he was astonished that she was her daughter.
Yeah.
Previously, he was expecting Krishna to be her son, Devaki's son.
Okay, from that angle,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because he probably doesn't think very highly of Vishnu. You know, being a demon, so they don't consider him to be something. Yeah. That's why Ravana wasn't really worried about Ramachandra, because to him he seemed human. And he didn't even get the benediction that he couldn't be killed by a human, because he considered them so insignificant that the devatas, the demons, anything that's powerful in the rakshasas, anything, he got the best. The humans he left out because he considered them so insignificant. Yeah, like that. You know, like that. So that's the thing, is he didn't catch that. So it's, you know, the same thing is that when it comes to here, they become blinded. And on the other side, then they respect. But at the same time, as they consider, you'll see, is they want to get rid of the demigods, and they know Vishnu is the controller there. But, yeah, it appears they're just not thinking it so well. This is one of his astonishments. Also, how is it that the eighth child of Devaki was a female? This also astonished him. Asuras are generally devotees of Mother Durga, Shakti, or of demigods, especially Lord Shiva. The appearance of Durga in her original eight-armed feature, holding various weapons, immediately changed Kamsa's mind about Devaki's being an ordinary human. Devaki must have had some transcendental qualities. Otherwise, why would the goddess Durga have taken birth from her womb? Under the circumstances, Kamsa, struck with wonder, wanted to compensate for his atrocities against his sister, Devaki. Kamsa explained. Because you see, is the unsteadiness, you only see a steadiness in the devotees, how they think. Yes. That there's a consistency. But in the non-devotees, you see, it's not very consistent, especially as they become more demoniac than how they'll, where they'll put their energy, where they'll not. So, just like to harass the Brahmins, the cows, you know, stop sacrifice, all that, you have to have faith that the scriptures are correct, that the power of the demigods comes from that. That they do have that effect. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise you would consider, you know, why even bother with that? You know what I'm saying? So, it's a real kind of mixed thing. So, that's the point. The living entity, even though they're naturally the servant of Krishna, but they take on this mundane kind of behavior. And so, it's not necessarily consistent how they're dealing. That's the difficulty.
And he also seems to be very kind of sentimental in a sense. Because at one point he wants to kill them all. Second later he bows down to them.
They're intense. It means these individuals are so powerful because they're so intense. So whichever way it goes that way. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Yeah. He is yeah. Where do you think the movies come from? Like that. So, in other words, these are the only ones maintaining that. Otherwise, then, you know, nowadays everyone's so blasé and doesn't care, no respect, that nothing's that, everything's the same all the way through. But here it's that he's come in here, he's the person who's going to kill him, then he finds out not, and then he's so missed the other, and then he's killed all these kids, and then the prophecy was false, you know, and so then he feels bad that he did, because it is his sister, and it is going to have bad effect on him, so he could have avoided all that. But he did have faith in the demigods, so now because they lied to him and he did all, now he's going to get the demigods, you know. You know, so that's the whole point, is it is a sister. So even amongst the demons, then it's there. So if it wasn't that her son was supposed to kill him, then he probably would be really taking care of her. You know, like that. You know, he's such a powerful person, he's going to take care of the, you know, because it's bodily consciousness, so they're going to do that well. So that's the thing, is you have all these different mixes in there, and they're all very intense. So you take it that one is their very powerful personalities, their kshatriyas. So you're going to have the way these emotions move is so strong. You know, that's why it's said, Rupa Goswami says, if you want to have a good drama that will catch everyone's attention and hold their attention, then there's two themes that you should use. It means one or the other or both. Either conjugal or chivalry. And then if it can be a conjugal scene amongst the chivalry, oh, that's you don't get better than that. You know, like that. You know what I'm saying? That's why Romeo and Juliet stands out more than La Bohème, right? You know, like that. Because, you know, unless it's like La Bohème, there's only one died and the other was still alive. But, you know, the point is, because they were just, you know, basically street people. They were just artists. Or the others, then they're from, you know, kind of these aristocratic families, and, you know, higher things like that. And then you go up more, you know. It's just, that's, it always, you notice that one. right? You know, what is it, Solomon, and what was her name from Ethiopia? Yeah, but, you know, that, you know, otherwise, you know, Solomon, this one, who cares? But this one you remember, you know, or Solomon, or who is the one with Delilah? That was another one.
Samson.
You know, so you remember these things because of it has the chivalry aspect, it has the other. So you see, as soon as if you put the two of them together, then, you know, bingo, it catches everybody. If it's only one or the other, it's only chivalry, okay, the men watch that. If it's only, you know, how you say, the romantic, then the ladies will watch that. But if it's both, then it can get both. It's, you know, there, if it's more of a family entertainment.
Yeah. We have that in Ramayana and Mahabharata.
Yeah, so that's the thing, is in Krishna's back, you have both. So it'll go back and forth, it'll catch everybody. So, you know, or like Krishna, he goes to kill, was it Banasura, and that, and he takes Satyabhama along with him. Right? You know, so like that. Or the whole fight with the demigods over the Parijata, like that. You know, so you have that, it has both together. So, you know, of all the stories, so many will be there in Dwarka Lila, but these ones generally will stand out.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, is that any sense here? Kamsa exclaimed, "Alas, my sister, alas, my brother-in-law, I am indeed so sinful that exactly like a man-eater, Rakshasa, who eats his own child, I have killed so many sons born of you." Srila Prabhupada comments, "Rakshasas are understood to be accustomed to eating their own sons, as snakes and many other animals sometimes do. At the present moment in Kali Yuga, Rakshasa fathers and mothers are killing their own children in the womb, and some are even eating the fetus with great relish. Thus, the so-called civilization is gradually advancing by producing Rakshasas." Kamsa continued, "Being merciless and cruel, I have forsaken all my relatives and friends. Therefore, like a person who has killed a Brahmana, I do not know to which planet I shall go, either after death or while breathing. Alas, not only human beings, but sometimes even providence lies." Right, because he's what's going on. "And I am so sinful that I believe the omen of providence and killed so many of my sister's children." Right, so he's thinking he's sinful because, you know, he was lied to. But it's actually because of having that kind of faith he did. It's because he's sinful that he then killed everybody. Because the point is if it's the seventh child, then and the other ones before should have all grown up quite nicely and comfortably. It's only the seventh one he has to worry about. And then you just keep an eye on it. You know? So that makes sense. "O great souls, your children have suffered their own misfortune. Therefore, please do not lament for them." Right? So he's shown the thing and shown the one. Then he goes on to the philosophy. Because that's technically is the point. Is otherwise, why would they have died unless that was what their destiny was going to be? Point is he didn't have to be the one taking part in it. You know what I'm saying? In other words, something bad's going to happen to somebody. So always these things happen by the effect of someone else. Right? That's how it works. There's one living entity is the cause of the other's fortune or misfortune. So, but the point is if you take part, you get the reaction for having taken part, even though it's what's supposed to happen to them anyway. You understand? Because you don't have to take part. Right? It's your choice. Means, in other words, these six are going to be killed. As we'll find out, I think, later about the Satgarbha. They were cursed that this would happen. Right? And so, therefore, it was going to happen. But he specifically didn't have to take part in it. Right? Because he was given good instruction by both Vasudeva and Devaki. So he didn't have to take part. But because he did, you know, if he didn't do, someone else would have killed him. Yes.
But he did it because he listened to Narada Muni.
But he didn't have to agree.
That's my point.
The point is because he's demonic, therefore you could say this, therefore it would go that way. Because Narada Muni knows the Satgarbha are supposed to be killed anyway because of the previous curse. And he's not going to be able to kill Krishna or Durga. So nothing's actually going to work out. And then you see the glory of the devotees, how they go through all these things. That's what we're saying, is that you have in Krishna karma, is that you may have things that are not necessarily nice happening, but then they set the standard and example for the others. But the point is, as he did, you know, because otherwise you say to someone else that that's what you're supposed to do, they won't agree. And he wouldn't be saying it anyway, because why would they want to be involved in that? But because he's a demon, he knows that he'll get involved, and then it will speed everything up. Yeah. Right, so then that will make Devaki and Vasudeva's difficulty shorter, because it speeds everything up.
My point was just in our own lives, it's a practical implication.
It's like this.
Nobody will say that,
okay,
up to that extent. But there are some things that devotees might suggest that you do, and you end up in a difficult situation.
But the point is are you looking at it and analyzing it and seeing that it may be valuable in Krishna consciousness?
In prisoners.
Yeah, so then, yeah. But the point is that if it's working in Krishna consciousness, then that's good. And if it doesn't, but the point is you also don't know what is the previous things and what your karma from the past is anyway. Because you can't say that just because I do the work, I should get the results. Mm-hmm. No, you take part as an instrument in the transformation, but whether it will transform, you have the karma that it should. Or what you do something good and you get blamed for it and all that. These are all mentioned in the Niti Shastras also. So you know what situations also not to get involved in. Does that make sense? You know, if somebody comes up, no, you got to say something to them. Someone's got to say something. So why don't you say it? Why are you saying it to me? Go say it to them. No, but you know they won't listen to me. No, but you're the thing. They'll listen to you. Says, but who said they'll listen? You know what I'm saying? Like that. So in that way, then you can say yes. You get the reaction because their advice was not good. But if it's looking at it, that what's the Krishna conscious thing to do? You're trying to work it out. And it may work or may not work, that's up to Krishna. Does that make sense? You know, and so then there's something to learn. You know? Yeah, the main thing is remember Krishna. Yeah,
good. And then at this point, this reminds me that it came up, and earlier the demigods speeded up everything, and then it could be, everything could be in a different way. There was a wedding, and they were in Vasudeva, and then they speeded it up, and then now the demigods.
Yeah, they didn't have to say it at that time. They could have said it after they were already home and locked the door or something,
yeah,
after he went back to his place.
This reminds me how Srila Prabhupada also said that the demigods, they are actually like really feeling for the devotees on earthly planets, and they're actually trying to speed up them going back to Godhead. So also kind of like you can expect these things to happen. Like,
yeah, well, that's fine.
We're being taken care of from that
side. Yeah. Yes. But also is that, you see, it's the Lord's pastimes that you get, means if you don't have such a big demon, how you'll collect all the other demons? If you just have, you know, it's just like otherwise there's just little demons everywhere. But you get a big demon, then they all come together, and then you can get rid of them all at once. You know. So that's it. Because otherwise, you know, you Duryodhana could have been gotten rid of much earlier. But no, you just leave it, and then you get, you know, how you say 640 million people together, and then, you know, you clean things up quite nicely. Otherwise, before, it's like, you know, Jarasandha, you know, it's every year for 18 years, you know, one Akshahini at a time. So as many as were killed in battle, but it took 18 years. But here you just do it all in 18 days. Much more efficient. Right? You know, but you don't want Jarasandha to become too powerful, otherwise he'll disturb the whole thing. How does Yudhishthira become? How does all these other... So, the Lord has plans. So how it'll work out and all this and that, then that's nice. Because otherwise, but he could have done this and that. Yeah, so if good, the gambling match. The gambling match is in the Adiparva. Right? That's in the first book. Right? Out of 18. Right? So if Bhima had just gotten up at that time and just smashed him over the head, then you would have a, 500-page book, Mahabharata. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point. You know, you're not going to get 100,000 verses out of that one. You know. So that's the whole point, is that everybody's still reading it because it's good. So that's the point. The Lord comes and performs his pastimes to attract the minds of the conditioned souls. So you see, you know, the Bhagavatam stories, the Mahabharata stories, these Ram Lila, it all attracts attention. You know what I'm saying? And so that's the whole point. So, and in the process, then Krishna has so much interaction with the devotees, all the tastes, all the relationships, so all that nice thing, so you can appreciate that. Otherwise, then, you know, how much you'll see. You know. Or when they were kids, you know, Bhima, while shaking the tree, and all the, you know, Duryodhana and his brothers who were in the tree, and Bhima shakes the tree and they all fell out, then, you know, Duryodhana could have fallen with his head on a rock and killed himself, and then, you know, story's over then. And then Yudhishthira would have been crowned the king, and Haribol, you know, we would have ended in 200 pages, you know, so. You know, like that. You know, then it would have just been a short bedtime story, you know. Yes, yes. It glorifies the devotee on how difficult and how they're able to go. Yes? No?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi ki.